Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, we hear the story The Scapegoat on X-1. But right now, it's the Hollywood Star Playhouse, the series known best for its broadcast of The Six Shooter on radio for the very first time, with Jimmy Stewart starring as Britt Ponsett. It went on to become a regular series on NBC. And it was only months later that they broadcast this sci-fi tale, The Tenth Planet, by Ralph Rose and starring Joseph Cotten, from September 7th, 1952, on NBC.
This is Joseph Cotten inviting you to listen now to Hollywood Star Playhouse, brought to you by the Bakers of America.
Hollywood Star Playhouse. 30 minutes of mystery, thrills, drama by Hollywood's finest writers featuring Hollywood's top stars. Brought to you by the Bakers of America through the cooperation of your baker. Hello there, this is Wendell Niles. In a moment, we'll bring you Act One of today's transcribed story, The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotten. Did you know that 40 to 50 years ago, most of our women baked their bread at home? That's right. But today, fine, fresh bread is readily available every shopping day. But this has been made possible only because of the development of large-scale methods of baking, because of hundreds of baking plants throughout the nation, and because of fast, modern means of bread distribution. So, 95% of the 40 million loaves of bread we Americans eat every day is supplied by our bakers. And in addition to bread, who but our bakers could turn out such a varied assortment of delicious bakery foods? Yes, for variety, convenience, economy, for nutritious, good eating, you can depend on the Bakers of America to help you serve better meals through bakery foods. And now, Act One of The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotten.
It's only a matter of time. They know our weakness and they know our strength. And they will conquer and rule the earth. It is only a matter of time. The time it takes to reach Earth from the tenth planet. My name is Walker. My home is in California, North American continent, planet Earth. I'm writing this in a room deep inside a spaceship approximately 4.5 million miles from Earth. On Earth, I was a teacher of mathematics. Among the others seated about me are a doctor, an accountant, a judge, an actor, a machinist, a farmer. The list is a long one. There are men of various nationalities who, one by one, disappeared off the face of the Earth. They're men who are being taken to the 10th planet. My life, for the most part, has been average, unexciting. On Earth, I attended church, discussed politics, gave my son boxing lessons, and on Saturday nights, my wife and I usually had a few friends in for bridge. These things are important, not only that you may know more about me, but that I may carefully report and you may evaluate everything that has happened since the afternoon I walked into my home and found a visitor awaiting me, a visitor from the Bureau in Washington. Hi, darling. Oh.
Todd, this is Mr. Webster. He's with the Bureau.
How do you do, Mr. Walker?
He's a G-man, Pop. A real honest...
Bobby.
Yes, Bobby. I suppose you and Mummy...
Yes, I'll keep him occupied, dear. Right. Come on, Bobby.
We'll drive down to the market.
Yeah. Sit down, Mr. Webster.
Thank you. Here are my credentials, Mr. Walker.
Mm-hmm. Just what do you want to see me about?
How long has it been since you've seen your brother, Mr. Walker?
Oh, Harry? Oh, I haven't seen him since he went... work at the Atomic Center over in New Mexico.
You talked to him recently? On the phone, I mean?
No. Why do you...
Letters from him?
Well, he usually writes about once a week, but I haven't had a letter now in, oh, I guess it's been close to 3 weeks.
Now, what did he write then?
Oh, just the usual things. Working hard, feeling fine. Usual things a brother writes. And
no mention of his work?
No. He's never written about his work. It's highly secret, I believe.
Yeah. Mr. Walker, you and your brother have always been very close, haven't you?
Yes, ever since our father died.
And he hasn't contacted you in any way during the past 2 weeks.
That's right.
Well, I guess that checks you out, Mr. Walker. Sorry to have bothered you.
Mr. Webster.
Yeah?
What's happened to Harry?
I'm sorry, Mr. Walker. My orders were to contact you, find out when you heard from him last. That's all I know.
He's dead.
Dead? Why do you say that?
If he weren't, I'd have heard from him.
Well, you can't be sure of that now. He may have been transferred. His work is classified. There could be any number of reasons.
No. When Harry took the job, we prepared for that. We have a code.
A code?
We agreed that if he should suddenly be sent somewhere unexpectedly, or if he weren't free to let me know where he is or what he's doing, he'd send me a wire saying, "Happy birthday, Pappy."
Mm-hmm. Pappy?
Well, he's called me that since Dad died.
I see. Well, now, let's not look on the black side, Mr. Walker. You may hear from him any day.
Can you give me any other information about him?
I'm sorry. I'm just doing a job.
So was he. Webster was barely out of the house when I was on the phone. After an hour and 20 minutes or so of red tape, I reached a security officer at the Atomic Center in New Mexico.
Security, Major Collins speaking.
Major, I'm the brother of Harry Walker.
Are you calling from New York, Mr. Walker?
I'm calling from my home in California. What difference does that make?
Well, if you give me your number, I'll call you back.
I realize the necessity of a caution, but I don't understand why you people won't tell me what's happened to Harry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Walker. I'll have to call you back.
Don't bother, Major. I'll be over there by tomorrow night. The heat was rising off the asphalt-covered street as I drove through the small desert town of Lurock. I was hot, dirty, and tired after driving all night. There weren't any signs to show me the way to the Atomic Center, so I stopped for coffee and got all the directions I needed. 45 minutes later, I was in a small frame building, a kind of sentry post, waiting for Major Collins.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Walker.
Major Collins?
Yes. I had to stop inside to pick up your brother's personal file. Before we say anything else, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you.
You have questions to ask me?
Please, Mr. Walker, sit down and let me get you.
Well, what's that?
Just a routine test. Now then, according to this file, Harry Walker's nearest living relative is his brother, Todd Walker. What is your wife's maiden name, Mr. Walker?
Miller. Jean Miller.
The birth date of your son?
April 12th, 1941.
Your grandfather's birthplace?
England. I believe Ipswich. Not too sure. Now, look here, Major.
Just a few more, Mr. Walker. What was the name of the family that lived next door to you in 1933?
33, well, we lived in Adamsville then. Well, there was a girl. Her father was a minister. Don't remember their name, though.
What happened to a dog you owned called Spot?
Well, Spot was killed. He fell down a flight of cement stairs. I was only 10 years old when that happened. Now, Major Collins...
Here's your pass. Now, if you come with me, Mr. Walker, I'll tell you everything we know about the disappearance of your brother.
Before I had a chance to say anything else, before I could think of anything else to say, we were beyond the two sentry posts, through the great steel gate and inside the restricted area of the Atomic Center.
You aren't radioactive, are you, Mr. Walker?
What?
We're passing through a safety zone. If either of us is contaminated by radioactive materials, pitchblende, uranium, an alarm bell will sound.
Oh.
How's your son doing in school this year?
Bobby, oh, fine.
I read the last two letters you wrote to your brother. Sounds like you got quite a boy on your hands.
Yeah, he is.
Playing right field on a school baseball team, huh?
First base.
Oh, yes.
Still checking, Major?
Nobody ever died from being too careful. Now, this was your brother's room.
Why is it padlocked?
I didn't want any of his things disturbed. It is exactly as he left it.
When are you going to tell me what happened to him, Major?
Cigarette.
Thank you.
3 weeks ago today, at about 8 p.m, your brother was seen to leave this room and enter the area outside. He appeared to be on his way to the mess hall for supper. He never arrived there.
Ready to go?
We don't know.
What?
All we do know is that about 50 yards from this building, he was accosted by a man wearing a heavy trench coat.
Trench coat in this heat?
He stopped and talked to this man. That's the last time he was seen.
Well, who was the man in the trench coat?
We haven't been able to identify him. Culver, one of your brother's friends here, saw them together. He heard the man call your brother by name, and he heard your brother mention the word target several times.
Target. This is just the way Harry left the room, huh?
Yes. Be careful about touching things, please.
Oh. There's your suits, shirts, billfold, wristwatch. All of his things are here.
Everything. Even his pass and identification papers. Everything but the clothes on his back.
What's this piece of rock here on the desk? Paperweight?
I suppose so.
Yeah, it's heavier than it looks. Probably something he was working with.
I can arrange for you to take his personal things in a day or two, Mr. Walker.
Thanks. Well, you certainly can't suspect him of deserting.
We never did. To do that, he'd have to walk out of the camp. He didn't walk out.
Then?
There's only one possible way he could have gotten out of here.
How's that?
Up. Straight up.
We left the room soon after that and started down the stairs. Neither of us said very much as we walked slowly back to the little building at the front gate.
Are you going to stay in Lurac, Mr. Walker? Or do you plan to return to California?
I don't know yet.
When you know, I'd appreciate if you'd call me.
Yes, yes, I will. What's that?
Safety zone alarm. One of us is contaminated.
What?
One of us has radioactive dust on his clothes. Over here, please, quickly. All right, Mr. Walker. I'll step out into the zone first. Looks like you're it. Will you step out, please? Come on.
Radioactive, are you sure?
Certainly.
How? I haven't touched anything except that paperweight.
I know, Mr.
Funny.
Walker.
I barely touched it.
You'd better spend the night here, Mr. Walker. By the time the boys in the decontamination room get through with you, it'll be quite late.
Thanks. Incidentally, I've made up my mind.
Yes?
I'm going to stay in Lurac. I'm going to find out what happened to Harry. Next morning, I drove back to town and called on a real estate agent. He knew of an adobe house for rent just off the highway, about 5 miles from the atomic center, and I took it sight unseen. The house was small but comfortable, and most important, it had a telephone. That evening, I called Jean.
Todd, oh, it's good to hear your voice. When are you coming home?
I thought I'd stay here a while, Jean. Maybe you and Bobby could fly over.
Of course, when?
Tomorrow.
Wonderful, darling. Did you find out anything about Harry?
I'll tell you when you...
Todd?
When you get here.
Well, what's the house like, dear? Todd?
Something's happening here, Jean. Something I don't understand.
What?
Everything's turning green. The house, the room, everything.
Todd, what is it?
There's something out there in the desert, a green light.
Todd, are you...
Jean, listen to me. Hello. Phone's dead. That noise, that humming, what is it? Yes? What do you want?
Good evening, Mr. Walker. May I come in? Thank you. Is it always so cold here?
Cold? It's hot over 90.
Precisely.
You're cold, even with that coat on?
I have brought you a message, Mr. Walker. I was told to say happy birthday, Pappy.
Oh, Harry's alive.
Of course.
And you, who are you?
Forgive me. My name is Torgut. I come from the 10th planet.
We'll return for Act 2 of The 10th Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton, in a moment. Mother, remember the days when you were a schoolgirl? And remember the sort of things you ate for your school lunches? Perhaps you'd say, why, I ate just about what I serve my own youngsters each day. Well, Mother, there's a big, important difference in bread today. Yes, it's a fairly safe bet. You're serving your children enriched bread. Bread enriched with wonderful, health-giving vitamins. And it's mighty important, Mother, that you serve your children plenty of enriched bread, not only for their school lunches, but for every other meal of the day. Children need the thiamine, the riboflavin, and the niacin contained in enriched bread. Those vitamins are necessary elements children need to give them good, healthy appetites. Elements to help keep them bright and alert all day long. And they also need the iron, which is added to enriched bread, to help them build good red blood. Maybe you think of bread as just one food. Well, bread is more than that. It's lots of good foods in one. Yes, there's flour and milk, sugar and shortening, and yeast and salt. They contain protein, calcium, and calories. Then when the bakers add precious vitamins and minerals, well, you can see why bread is known as our most important food. And that's why we say bread supplies lots of food for so very little cost. So, Mother, help keep your children healthy and happy. Serve enriched bread at each meal every day. And next time you visit your food store, look for the word enriched on the wrapper of the bread you buy. And now, Act Two of The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton.
My heart was pounding like a voodoo drum. I didn't want to believe what I'd heard. Talk of flying saucers, spaceships, interplanetary travel. This wasn't for me. I was a professor of mathematics, a logical man. And yet, there I was in a rented adobe house in the middle of the desert talking to a man who had calmly announced in a manner that made me believe him that he came from an unknown planet somewhere in the Earth's solar system. The Tenth Planet.
In talking to Earthmen, I find that to be the most simple designation.
But there are only 9 planets in our solar system.
You are mistaken.
But the scientists...
are mistaken.
I see. You say you've seen my brother recently.
Yes.
Where is he?
With us.
He's all right? Unharmed?
In perfect physical condition and very happy. In fact, only one thing could make him happier.
Yeah.
Sit down, Mr. Walker. My time is limited and I have much to say.
For the next 2 hours, I listened to the most fantastic narrative I had ever heard in my life. It defied logic, reason, and at the same time seemed to explain the flying saucers, the green fireballs, and the disappearances of so many men during the past few years.
Industrialists, artists, jurists, writers, scientists are but a few.
Why? Why are you doing this?
So that someday these men will be able to rebuild what is left of Earth.
Rebuild Earth?
Your experiments into atomic research, juvenile as they are dangerous. You are children playing with matches that could ignite the universe. We cannot let that happen. Therefore, the time is near for us to conquer Earth. You have seen our Raypars.
Raypars? I never heard.
Oh, I believe you call them flying saucers. Most amusing. These are scouting craft. Soon we shall land in force.
When?
Before I may answer that, Mr. Walker, I must know whether or not you intend to join us.
Oh, I see.
I realize you will want time to consider this proposal.
Yes, I will.
I am authorized to give you 3 days, Earth time. In 72 of your hours exactly, I shall return.
Suppose my answer is no.
Then you shall stay here on Earth.
But I could warn them. Warn all the nations on Earth. Make them stop production of atomic weapons.
Warn them? Do you think they would believe you, Mr. Walker?
All right, Todd. Do you want to tell me now about Harry?
Harry's safe. He's fine.
Well, that's a relief. You hadn't mentioned him all day, so I thought... Well, Todd, where is he?
On the 10th planet.
Oh, darling, stop joking. I'm serious.
So am I. Deadly serious. Jean, listen to me. Listen. And remember that I've never been more serious about anything in my life.
Good evening, Mr. Walker.
Oh, Major Collins, come in, sir.
Sorry to disturb you at this time of night, Mr. Walker, but we've been very busy at the research center, and I didn't want to think I'd forgotten about you.
Well, it's kind of you to take such an interest, Major, but, well, to be honest, I don't think we'll be around much longer.
Oh? Have you had some word from your brother, Harry?
No, not exactly, but, well, under the circumstances, there doesn't seem to be much point in staying here. I'm sure you people do everything you can to find him.
Mr. Walker, are you sure you haven't heard from your brother?
I have neither seen nor talked to my brother.
I ask if you've heard from him.
Yes, I have heard of him.
Mr. Walker, as a citizen, it's your duty to turn any information you may have over to me.
You wouldn't believe my information, Major.
Well, suppose you let me be the judge of that.
All right. I've received a message from Harry.
Where is he?
On the 10th planet.
What?
He is on the 10th planet.
Mr. Walker, this is no
time
to...
I'm perfectly serious, Major. I told you you wouldn't believe me.
I see. And that's all you have to tell me?
One thing more. The inhabitants of that planet are going to conquer this Earth.
With rocket ships and ray guns, I presume. Mr. Walker, I'll ask you once more. Where is your brother?
I've told you.
You leave me no choice, Mr. Walker. I shall have to report the fact that you... Well, that you are withholding... vital information. Good night.
Shortly after 10, we heard it. And again, the desert and the room, everything turned that strange metallic green.
It's fantastic. Todd, I'm scared.
No, baby, it's all right. This is just how it was the other night.
How long before he'll come to the house?
Any minute now.
I don't like this.
It's funny. He should have been here by now.
Maybe something's happened. Todd, maybe they're going to kill us.
No. Don't talk like that. I'll take a look out here.
Todd, don't leave me.
Yeah, stay with Bobby. I'll be right back.
Todd!
Good evening, Mr. Sure. Walker.
Hoggett, we've been waiting inside for you.
Yes, I know. Have you reached your decision, Mr. Walker?
Yes, we have. We're going to go with you.
We?
My wife and son, we're all packed.
I'm afraid you misunderstood my original proposal, Mr. Walker.
What?
My offer to you did not include your wife and son.
It took me only a second to realize what this meant, and then I turned and ran as fast as I could. Suddenly, in that moment, I was a man of Earth with a wife and child, and I had no intention of leaving them. Jean.
Yes, dear, what?
Get your things, hurry. We're getting out of
Todd,
here.
Todd, what is it?
I'll tell you later. Now, get the car started, and I'll get Bobby.
But what about...
Please,
what,
Jean.
What is it, Pop?
We're going home, son, back to California. Come on, here we go.
I don't think I'd like it on another planet. I'd like it right here. This other planet, I'd scare me.
I'll drive, Jean.
Where are we going?
I'm going to contact the atomic center. I looked back through the rearview mirror and breathed easier. The night was moonlit, pure golden moonlight. It wasn't green anymore. When we reached the highway, I was sure we'd make it.
Darling, what is it?
I don't know. Gas is all right. Yeah, take my jacket. I'm going to look under the hood. Yeah, ignition's okay. It's not flooded. Jean, I don't see a thing wrong.
What shall we do?
There's a gas station about a half a mile down the road. You stay here with Bobby.
Todd.
I won't be gone over 20 minutes. What is it? Oh, no. Green. Everything's turning green. The ray pod.
Mr. Raypaw, they're coming after me. I've got to get away.
Mr. Walker, why exert yourself?
What? Target.
You cannot escape us.
I'll get away. I've got to get away. I've got to make it. I've got to make it. No! No, Gene! Gene!
Positive that Earth as we know it is doomed. There's only one slim chance. If Major Collins were to have the radioactive rock we found in my brother's room analyzed, he would find that it is not of our planet. Perhaps then he would realize I was telling the truth. Otherwise, it's only a matter of time. They know our weakness and our strength, and they will conquer and rule the Earth. It's only a matter of time.
Thanks, Joe. And if my voice seems a bit shaky, it's because you've given us something to think about.
Wendell, I really don't think there's a word of truth in this flying saucer business. The other day, I read a statement by a man who runs an airline. He said that 20% of his pilots had never even seen a flying saucer. Oh, by the way, my thanks to Joan Banks and Richard Beale, Ben Wright, Peter Leeds, and Hans Conried, whose performance, you might say, was out of this world.
Thanks again, Joe. We'll hear about next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse right after our Bakers of America home economist, Miss Helen Reed, tells you about a dessert idea for your school lunches. Miss Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Niles. A school lunch may be a light lunch, as against an evening meal where you serve several different dishes. But still, a school lunch should be balanced nutritionally. That's why a dessert for lunch is just as essential as for a bigger, heavier meal. But what could be simpler for you to serve or more enjoyable and tasty for your children than cupcakes? Now, you can get either the frosted devil's food cupcakes or the frosted white cupcakes in the bakery department of your food store. You'll find them all neatly wrapped to keep them fresh for several days. And each package usually contains two or perhaps three generous-sized cupcakes. You might get several packages next time you shop for food. And if your children carry their lunch to school, you'll find cupcakes fit into a lunchbox very nicely. Of course, cupcakes make an ideal after-school snack, along with a tall, cold glass of milk. Cupcakes are delicious. They're wholesome, and they add extra energy school children need. You'll find they're very economical, too. When you visit your food store, visit the bakery department. Find out what a wonderful variety of ready-to-serve desserts the Bakers of America prepare for you, fresh and delicious, each day.
Thank you, Miss Reed. And now here's a word about next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse. It's a story called The Reluctant Witness, starring Dennis O'Keefe.
Every detail of that horrible accident etched itself on my memory. I was determined that I would never allow myself to be called as a witness. And later, when I found it wasn't an accident, but murder, then it was too late.
Joseph Cotten can currently be seen in the Universal International Technicolor production, Untamed Frontier. Tonight's transcribed story was written for Mr. Cotten by Charlie Smith and Ralph Rose. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Wendell Niles speaking for the Bakers of America with an invitation to be with us again next Sunday for Hollywood Star Playhouse. Enjoy another half hour of fine dramatic entertainment brought to you direct from Hollywood by the Bakers of America, who are helping you serve better meals through bakery foods.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Hollywood Star Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from September 7th, 1952 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now time for X-1 with the Richard Maples story, The Scapegoat, broadcast on NBC on August 8th, 1957.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, The Scapegoat by Richard Maples. Now, X-1 and The Scapegoat.
The old guy didn't have a chance. All he could do was shield his head with his limp arms and moan, while this other fellow, a husky young six-footer, gave him a vicious, cold-blooded beating. Hey, cut it out! You, cut it out, beating up an old man like that! I said cut it out! Now, let go of him. Well, what have you got to say for yourself before I belt you as hard as you hit the old man here? Well, hey, you, wait! Wait, you no good hoodlum! Hey, you all right, Pop? Are you okay? What happened? Was he trying to rob you or something? Look, you'll be all right now. You'll be okay. You're lucky I came along then. No cops anywhere. Okay, come on, old-timer. Up on your feet. You're going home with me. I suppose it seems callous to think of it, but this old man was just what I'd been looking for. A brutal assault and a helpless old man, and I was the hero, just what I needed. You see, I'd just come from a meeting with the city fathers and the commissioner of the police department. And old man Jones, my publisher, had promptly yanked the rug out from under me and chickened. I'd written the articles panning the city's handling of the juvenile delinquency problem, because Jones had to be in his bonnet to be the mayor. Now, when the heat was on, he weaseled out. We had a few words, Jones and I quit. But now I had him. An eyewitness story, no cops anywhere, and a young bruiser beating up a defenseless old man. I figured I'd take him home, let my wife fix him up, keep him around the house until the story broke.
Ed, what's the idea of... Ed!
Right, take it easy, honey. It's all right. This old guy just needs some patching up, that's all. Come on, old-timer.
Oh, but he looks awful. Who is he? What is blood in
him? Now, come on. Help me get him inside.
He's cold. His wrist... It's cold?
Yeah, shock, I think. Come on, in with him. All right, now, let him down on the chair. There you are, Pop.
Were you in an accident?
No, some hoodlum was beating him up. I chased him off.
Oh, that's awful. Did you call the police?
There weren't any police there. I'm going to crack this whole situation wide open with this story.
Hey, Mom! Hey! Wow!
Never mind. Go into the bathroom and bring out some towels. Ed, we'll need some bandages. And...
Yeah, we'd better get a blanket around him.
A blanket? It's 90 degrees.
It's for shock, son.
Go ahead, Tommy.
Okay, Mom.
Ed, I think he's coming to now. He's opening his eyes.
No, you're all right, old-timer. You're all right.
Well, isn't this cozy?
What's your name?
Ash.
Ash. And first name?
That's it.
Oh, then what's your last name?
I don't know.
All right. Take it easy. What happened? Who was that hoodlum? Did you ever see him before?
I don't remember.
Well, why was he hitting you?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You missing any money?
I'm not sure.
Well, I suppose I scared him off before he could rob you.
Yes. Oh, yes. You rescued me, didn't you? I'm really very grateful.
Don't try to talk too much now. You'll feel better after you've had something to eat.
Ed, we have nothing in the house. We were just going to have a salad.
Well, salad's all right.
Well, Ed, I think maybe we'd better get Mr. Ash to a hospital or to his house or something.
Oh, look, Nana, I told you why I want him here.
Ed, please, come inside.
Well, what's the matter with you?
Come inside.
Okay. You just sit right here, Mr. Ash. I'll be right back. I just want
to... Yes, I'll be all right now.
Nan, what's the matter with you?
Get rid of him.
What?
Get him out of here.
But why?
He gives me the willies.
Oh, no, it's just the heat.
Well, you must know he leered at me.
He... Oh, Nan, he's an old man. He's just been beat up and in shock.
Ed, please.
Oh, no. I've got to keep him here. He's my proof. I'll write a story that'll rip the administration wide open, and Jones can't pull it out because I've got the proof right here, and I was the eyewitness.
But, Ed...
No. Please. He stays here, and that's all there is to it.
You're listening to The Scapegoat, tonight's attraction on X-1. Once, a tall and beautiful tree stood in the forest. It had been there for 200 or 300 years. In the course of that time, wind shook it and lightning struck near it. A hurricane bent it once until its top was nearly at the ground. But none of the ferocious assaults could fell that tall, proud tree. But then one day, the most spindly-legged, pot-bellied, adenoidal, open-mouthed creature that the forest had ever seen sat down in the cool shade of that tree. This was what was called a man, and he wanted to smoke what is called a cigar. He did. And he threw his match among the pine needles, and when he had smoked the cigar, he threw that away, too, and went off, because somewhere down by the lake there was waiting for him what is called a woman. And he had the hope that maybe she didn't feel like nagging anymore. Before nightfall, that tree that had withstood all those assaults was ashes, and thousands of other trees in that forest were, too. The man is still living. If you know any of his species, you might tell him that trees don't have Adam's apples and shrill voices. Trees are beautiful. And men ought to be careful with matches. Now back to X-1 and the scapegoat.
The old man seemed to recover pretty quickly. I suppose mostly because I'd gotten there in time. As a matter of fact, he began to talk. And he kept it up through the whole meal. And it was the craziest story you ever heard. He insisted he'd come from another world outside our solar system, where people existed in a kind of liquid state, bouncing about for the most part like large water-filled bladders. They were, however, capable of taking almost any shape their superior minds willed. They could flatten and drift about on the water, or they could inflate and rise in the air.
As a matter of fact, they can even become facsimiles of other living things, taking on the shape and texture and coloration, a capability which adds greatly in their main function of traveling as missionaries of goodness among the peoples of the galaxy.
Goodness, huh?
Oh, yes. They're perfect. As perfect as angels.
All right. I've had enough. I asked for it.
Nan, where are you going? Don't rush off.
Well, I guess I know when I'm being kidded. Very funny, Mr. Ash.
But I'm not kidding.
Don't tell me that you're a missionary to Earth.
Oh, no, I'm here because I was banished.
Oh, sort of a fallen angel.
Exactly.
Look, Ash, it's too hot for games. If you don't want to explain what happened this afternoon, that's your privilege. But as you know, this story means a lot to me. And I did stick my neck out for you.
One moment, my boy. Let me finish. You see, I'm a throwback.
A what?
A throwback, an atavism. They tried to reform me, you know, but there was something rather fundamental about me, something rather evil. Then, of course, as a last resort, they put me into one of the machines, and they threw the switch.
Oh, sure, sure. They killed you. Look, I'm not in the mood for shaggy dog stories.
They didn't kill me, exactly. It was sort of like water being scraped over the edge of a sharp rock. When I came to, I was drifting through space. And then, of course, much later, I landed on Earth. Oh, I've had many shapes through the years. Mainly people who've died. I find that's much more convenient.
Yeah. Well, look, if you'll excuse me, I have to make a telephone call. I'll just go into the other room.
I dare say you want to call the hospital. I'm not psychotic, really.
I've got iced coffee.
Oh, yes, you're just in time, Mrs. Potter. I think perhaps I'd better prove my story, if you'll wait just a moment. You see, it's done by the generation of a high electrostatic field. Something like this. If you'll notice, my face begins to lose definition. It moves as if it had a life of its own. Now watch!
Ah!
Ash, stop it! Ash!
Looks considerably younger, doesn't it?
30 years younger. 30 years just dropped away like... Listen, this story will set the whole country on its ear. With my byline on it.
Oh, Ed, don't let him take you in. It's a trick. It's mass hypnotism or something.
I saw it right here. So did you. I'll have an exclusive. Life will have to come to me for the story. I've got to admit that I could share something of Ann's point of view. He wasn't really very pleasant. As a matter of fact, he had what you'd call colossal gall. After supper, he came right down to cases.
Naturally, if I'm to stay here and keep my identity secret until you can arrange for an exclusive story, I will need a little pocket money.
How much?
How much you got?
Well, I don't know. I got about $22, and payday isn't until Thursday.
Well, how about your bank account?
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Well, we'll see what we can arrange later. I am a little tired, though. I think it's about time to go to bed. Ah, I noticed a rather comfortable bed in here. Well, I'll see you all in the morning. Good night. And thank you again for rescuing me.
Ed, that's our bedroom.
I know.
Well, you go right in there and tell him that he can't
Listen.
Sleep.
He locked the door.
Oh, Ed, do something.
All right. You get some sheets from the linen closet, and I'll make up the couch. Next day, I made careful inquiries, started to feel around for contacts on live at the AP, someplace to really break the story big. About 5 in the afternoon, Jones, the publisher, called me into his office.
Sit down, Ed. I've got some good news.
Now, look, Mr. Jones, ever since you left me out on a limb at the mayor's
conference... Oh, now, let's not worry about that, Ed. We've got something very interesting going for us now that changes everything. They've arrested a gang of kids for shoplifting.
Well,
one of them is Tommy, your son.
What? Arrested Tommy?
Wait, Ed, don't go off half-cocked. It's a break, don't you see? You can cover delinquency with the lid off now. You'll be riding as a parent in the same boat with other parents. Hey, wait a minute. Where are you going?
At the police station, I had the distinct feeling they'd been waiting for me.
Well, Mr. Potter, we meet under unfortunate circumstances.
Can the phony sympathy, Thompson. Just let me see my boy.
We'd better have a little talk first about all those articles you're writing about the police force.
I've got no talking to do. This is a lousy frame-up against me and the paper. Now, you get my son out here and do it fast.
You don't understand, Mr. Potter. Your son is in trouble. He's been identified as leading a gang of kids who spent most of the morning shoplifting in the stores all over town.
That's nonsense. How could my boy do anything like that? He's only 12. Who identified him anyway?
The shopkeepers and the other members of the gang. You can see him, Mr. Potter, but I still think we'll want to have our little talk.
Son, what's this all about?
It was Ash.
Ash?
Yes, I told him about the gang.
What the heck are you talking about?
Some of the fellows got together and built a hut for a clubhouse.
What does the gang do?
Oh, different things. One of the fellows is a .22 and we hunt rats and...
Well, go ahead. What is it?
We smoke.
Oh. And what else?
That's all honest.
What about shoplifting?
No, that was Ash. He wanted me to talk the gang into shoplifting, but I wouldn't. Then he changed himself to look like me and talked the fellas into it when I wasn't around. I only knew about it because I ran into them after they'd robbed their store.
Who is this Ash she keeps talking about?
Why, he's a man. Oh, never mind. Listen, the boy's beside himself because of all he's been through. Will you let me take him home with me?
Of course, Mr. Potter, but the charges still hold. Don't forget to stop in and have our little talk before you report back to juvenile court.
I called the house, and Ash answered the phone.
I'm glad you called, Ed. I'm out of cash, you know. I need a small loan.
Now, listen to you. The police have picked up Tommy. He's been charged with the shoplifting you did today.
Oh, now I'm sorry about that. You see, there's a certain cultural difference between you and me. I didn't understand.
You're going to help me get him out, you hear? You're going to tell everybody the truth.
Well, of course. Of course I will.
Now, listen. I'm coming home. Nan will be back from her mother's any minute. Don't you tell her about this, you hear?
Well, of course I won't. I'll be waiting right here.
I suppose I was a fool, but I still wanted that story. I wanted it so bad I could taste it. The exclusive account of an extraterrestrial being. Driving home, I had it all figured out. I'd bring Ash down to the police station. He'd tell the story, go through his changing act to convince him, and spring Tommy. I'd have my story already filed and beat everybody. In the meantime, I just hoped Nan wouldn't spoil everything alone with it. Alone with him. And then suddenly I let my foot come down on the accelerator like it was made out of lead. I pulled the car to a stop and sprinted up the driveway. Nan, where are you? They were both in the bedroom. Nan stood in the far corner with her back against the wall. Her shoulders were scratched and her lip cut. She held a heavy bookend poised to strike at Ash, who was in front of her, moving stealthily forward. He turned as I came in, and I froze in amazement. I couldn't recognize him. And then, all at once, I realized I was looking at the spitting image of myself.
Ed, I knew it wasn't you. I knew it wasn't you.
Well, if you'll both excuse me, come back here. I'll get you.
I bolted through the window and circled the house. I spotted him rushing down the street, and I caught him around the corner in the same spot where I'd first seen him.
Let go of me!
You've got this coming to you. You've got this coming to you. I slugged him. Yet I knew it was useless the instant the blow landed. He felt just like sponge rubber. Yet I kept hitting him. I didn't bother listening to his cries, even after he changed himself back to an old man. And then suddenly I felt a hand grab my shoulder and whirl me around, and a fist exploded in my eye.
What's the matter with you? What do you think you're doing, beating up an old man like that? You're no good. Who am I out of...
I searched desperately for an explanation. And then, abruptly, without having said a word, I reeled and stumbled down the street. Home. To Nan.
Fred Collins again, and I'll have another word for you about X-1 in a moment.
Hi, this is Walter O'Keefe. You know, they say there's nothing new under the sun, and maybe that's true, but there is something new under the moon, and that's Nightline. In Nightline, we think we've found the way to use the intimacy as well as the lightning-fast maneuverability of radio in an hour-and-a-half package of high-voltage, different entertainment. We found the way to make the airwaves your magic carpet to wherever big things are happening. Anywhere in the country, for that matter, anywhere in the world. Now, let's say that your favorite comedian is performing at a Las Vegas nightclub. He's packing them in, and you've really got to have connections to get a table. Well, Nightline is that connection, and your radio is your ringside table. More things than you'd believe are happening in the so-called still of the night, and Nightline is your line to exciting entertainment after dark. My feeling is Nightline marks a new era in nighttime entertainment. Tune us in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and you'll hear what I mean.
You have just heard X-1,
presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Shadow World by Clifford D. Simak. Of all the upsetting phenomena, the most alarming was this. I had a little shadow that went in and out with me. It's in Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you The Scapegoat, written by Richard Maples and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Carl Weber as Ed, Wendell Holmes as the changeable Mr. Ash, Jane Amar as Nan, Bobby Alford as Tommy, Guy Rep as Mr. Jones, and Roger DeCoven as Thompson. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Kenneth McGregor and is an NBC Radio Network production.
There's excitement in the air at night, and Nightline brings it to you. Hear Nightline with Walter O'Keefe next on most of these NBC stations.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 8, 1957 on NBC. And so closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. It's been a pleasure.